This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
It does feel good to have Bob Leader be our official intro music. That was wonderful. And, in fact, we'll have more from Bob a little bit later on. Welcome back to Joe's Patio. Joe, good to be with you once again. How you doing?
Doing well as can be expected. At least we're outside. It's beautiful here. We can bike and walk and even swim. And we certainly are thinking and praying for everybody involved. And let's hope that we have baseball sooner than later, although certainly no way to set a target date.
No, I think the goalposts keep moving on us. We're going to chat about some of the ideas and speculation that have come out of baseball. We understand it's 46 and rainy in Boston today. We would have been at Fenway Park for the home opener. That makes today another one in an increasingly long line, Joe, of difficult days. I mean, there's nothing quite like the home opener, and a chance, I think, for the fans of the Red Sox to wash away what has been somewhat of a forgettable offseason. We sure are a little bit wistful that we're not at Fenway today.
No question about it. Opening day is always a rebirth. It's a renaissance, and to not be there today really makes it hit home, I think, even more than the opener last week, which would have been in Toronto on the road.
Don't you think, Joe, that one of the things that makes baseball the great game it is, and broadcasting baseball the great job that it is, all the people you come in contact with and cross paths with through the years. And we see a lot of the writers down here in Florida at spring training, but I feel like the home opener, back at your ballpark where you have spent so many years, you see the same folks in the press room, in the dining room, up and down the elevators, the security guards down on the field at Fenway Park, the clubhouse attendants. There is a real family return to the home opener.
Yeah, no question about it. People you haven't seen since the end of the previous season who work at the ballpark, the game day workers. Of course, we do see the front office people, the players, and the staff in spring training. But it really is special to come back to the ballpark and see all those familiar faces, and of course the bunting out around the barriers around the fences, and to be on the field for the pregame ceremonies, which I've had the pleasure of doing for many, many years, some so memorable. I'll never forget 05. One of my highlights was Don Orsillo got to introduce the world champion Red Sox, and I introduced the visiting New York Yankees. And when I introduced Mariano Rivera, I could hear the crescendo building. So I said, let's pause. And the hand for Mariano Rivera was just incredible because, of course, he had given up the Dave Roberts steal and the hit by Bill Miller that tied the game in game four. We all know what happened after that. But Rivera handled with such class and dignity and with such a smile. And that was, to me, is one of the most memorable opening day ceremonies we've ever had. That in 2008 when Bill Buckner came out of the left field wall. And you could see him wiping away the tears in the photos from that day. Not that he had to be forgiven, because if we want to go back to 86, the game was tied. They'd already blown the lead. I don't know why people lose sight of that fact, but that's a story for another podcast.
Most people think that that game, Joe, was lost on the, whether it's a wild pitch, pass ball, whatever you want to call it, that that play changed the whole game.
I think it did. Without a doubt. And it also was lost when Dave Stabelin wasn't put out at first base for kneeling Bill Buckner in the bottom of that 10th inning. And well, that's another can of worms.
No question about that. We're going to keep going on a little bit of 04, and then we'll get into the 2018 Divisional Series, which will air on WEEI tonight. We're excited to carry that entire World Series run. We're going to do that on our air for the next several weeks, and that should be a lot of fun to relive good memories. You know, if there's an upside to not having real games, Joe, it's that I'm now transfixed on the MLB Network for all the great games that they have been airing. And, you know, they go through the top 20 games of all time, and they just played Game 4 of the 2004 American League Championship Series. They've got Kevin Millar on with Bob Costas and Tom Verducci talking about all the emotion of that night. You know, it's crazy. People do think about the steal because it's the most famous play in the last 30 years in Red Sox history. What David Ortiz did in the 12th inning, I mean, none of it matters were it not for what Ortiz does after they escape the major jam in the 11th inning. And Joe, you can speak to this better than anybody. Before that night, David Ortiz was not the clutch hero that he would become for the remainder of his career.
He wasn't in 2003 either until he tied the game when the Red Sox were on the verge of elimination against Oakland in the division series. And then he had the slow start, as the entire team did. I mean, they're down 3-0. But he hit that walk-off one of my favorite players, pitchers Paul Quantrill, whose son is a top pitcher now for San Diego. Hit it into the bullpen, and we all know what happened the next night with the almost six-hour marathon and his walk-off hit there. But that was the real start. I mean, he'd had some big hits during the regular season, but that was the real start of the legend of Big Poppy.
I know that people throughout New England think they know you, Joe, like you're a member of their family because they've had you on in the background of so many family events and meals and, you know, cocktail parties and Labor Day picnics. I think they would be interested to know, Joe, let's take today, the home opener at Fenway Park, a late afternoon start. What's your routine like on a day like today? What would you have done today had you left your house and driven to the ballpark for the home opener?
Well, never knowing about the Southeast Distressway, I would have left very early. Probably with family. My son Tom always scheduled himself off that day from his medical practice. Depends when Jan got back from spring training, whether she would have gone or not. But get to the ballpark early, go to the booth, and make sure everything works and set up. And then go down to the manager's office to tape the manager's show and try to be on the field to greet people in batting practice. Not so much the players you've seen all spring training, but a lot of the people, as you mentioned before, we hadn't seen since last season.
Do you think there is any silver lining for Ron Renicki in that, you know, it was so late in the game when he got named the interim manager? Does he get a chance? He's managed before. He's had success as a big league manager, but do you think that there's a sliver of upside in this for him in that he can maybe take a little extra time to get himself in order for the season to come?
Well, I think that's part of it also. The fans will be so happy just to have baseball back and to have life back again that wins and losses might not be as critical when this thing gets started.
So Scott Boras was vocal about this, and I think more and more you're seeing stories about that in the discussions between baseball and the players' union, it is, if not inevitable, increasingly, exceedingly likely that when we start the season, if we do, there will not be fans in the ballpark. I'm totally with that, Joe. Don't you think that makes the most sense?
I think it does, especially I saw a stat that only about 30% of baseball revenue comes from gate, from attendance. I mean, TV pays the freight, so does radio. Certainly, we know that at Intercom with a rights fee that's paid. And social media, of course, has been a tremendous boon for baseball, one of Bud Selig's legacies, really one of his great ideas. So I think that's very feasible. You could start earlier that way, and it makes a lot of sense. Give the fans some programming. They'll have baseball back.
We are here in Florida, and it was just yesterday that the stay-at-home order went in place. We know that people in New England have been putting up with that for a little bit longer, and in California and New York and some of these other states, it's been in place a lot longer. But I do think that around here, Joe, it has started, I think. I've seen in grocery stores and out on the roads, more people are wearing masks. I think for the first time, it is amazing, even though we've known what is happening, that the power that these elected officials have, they say one thing, and all of a sudden there's this black and white dramatic change in behavior.
Yeah, we've seen it, though. I mean, we were at the beach 2.5 weeks ago and saw the spring breakers in action and not observing the physical distancing. And the same goes for senior citizens that we've seen here in the complex in which we live. But I think right now, I was out today to a store and saw all the masks and the gloves and wiping down the shopping carts. It has hit home, and let's hope it can at least have a cautionary effect and slow this thing down.
The one nice thing is people are out and about riding bikes, walking, you know, holding hands with their spouse. There is some bright side to this, and we hope that maybe that can carry over. Tonight on WEEI, we air Game 1 of the 2018 Divisional Series. Before we get into some of the specifics of that game, Joe, that year, pure magic, really from the outset. Once you get over the major speed bump of the first game of the season, a historic first month of the season, they just went on an unbelievable run. Going into the playoffs, you had to feel like, Joe, in all your years, that this team had as good a chance. And really, didn't you think they should win the World Championship?
I did, without a doubt. I thought they should have won it in 07, and they should have won it in 18. 04 was a great surprise, the greatest comeback ever. And 13 was just the bonus because of what happened with the Boston Marathon bombing and the way that team took off. But 2018, the heartbreak bullpen and implosion in Game 1, and then winning 17 of the first 19, and wire to wire after that first day, 108 regular season wins, anything but a world championship would have been a big disappointment. And it started out so well in Game 1 with J.D. Martinez hitting a three-run homer in the very first inning, and the Red Sox building a 5-0 lead. But I did not have a great feeling when that game ended because it almost got away. It was a one-run victory, and the Red Sox just did hang on.
Indeed it did. It seems like there was a carryover for the regular season. So as Joe mentioned, in the bottom of the first inning, two men are on, and J.D. Martinez comes up, and here's what that sounded like.
The pitch. Swing. There's a drive to left field. Back by the wall. Is it high enough? Yes! Three-run homer into the first row of the monster seats. 3-0 Red Sox. A three-run homer by J.D. Martinez, 3-0 Red Sox. J.D. had 8 three-run homers in the regular season, and he hit a bullet.
So, Joe, Fenway's rocking. Everybody's feeling good. The Red Sox closed the regular season with the New York Yankees. They were setting up their pitching. They won the division, don't you think, that night in August when they swept the Yankees late on a Sunday night when Tony Renda pinch runs and scores on a Benintendi hit, putting himself in the record books as one of the few guys who has more World Series rings than at-bats in a World Series season. But the Red Sox, the point is, for 2 months, they'd known they were going to be in the position they were in. But there was some carryover, didn't you feel like, from the regular season into that very first inning?
Oh, I did, yes. It seemed to fit the script perfectly of the way that the regular season had gone. And after it almost got away, you started to feel uneasy because it should have been an easy victory, and it was anything but that. And, of course, then Game 2 came along, the Yankees win, And thankfully, Aaron Judge had that boombox.
No kidding.
Playing Sweet Caroline going by the Red Sox clubhouse on his way to the bus.
That was not well received. You know, the Red Sox, they have a new manager in Alex Cora, who in this game won, and then throughout the entire playoffs, just has this incredible run, this magic touch. But J.D. Martinez, we didn't know it when Game 1 was played. Mookie Betts was the MVP of the American League, but J.D. Martinez was just a spectacular force, really the heart of the lineup that they did not have the year prior. Looking back on that year, Joe, what was it like watching J.D. and the impact he had on that offense?
Well, he had a tremendous impact in terms of his production. He also had a great impact in the batting cages and off the field, constantly talking hitting with Mookie and Jackie, Xander. He had a great influence, I think, because this club was so focused on what they were doing on the field. They talked baseball constantly, and J.D. was a very big reason for that. So he had impact in all areas, and he gave the Red Sox the big booming bat that they hadn't had in 16 and 17 when they made postseason and didn't last long.
I think a lot of people felt angst when the Yankees signed Gerrit Cole in this offseason. And yet, Joe, I'm sort of astonished by the fact, not only have the Red Sox won four in the last 15 years, people seem to forget that all these moves that look great on paper, the last decade plus, have just backfired in spectacular fashion in the playoffs. And in game one of this divisional series, Jay Happ is on the mound. He gives up the home run to J.D. And then in the third inning, both Steve Pierce and Xander Bogaerts deliver. It's 5-0 Red Sox after three innings.
Yeah, and guys that would, of course, rear their heads later with Steve Pierce going on to win the World Series MVP. So it was representative of the way that team put it all together with so many different people contributing.
It's sort of the beginning of realizing how Alex Cora is going to manage the bullpen and the whole pitching staff. It really kind of came immediately in the playoffs. You got your ace, the big horse, Chris Sale, on the mound. But they are really tight with him, and they take him out in the sixth inning. And, Joe, that's when things start to get hairy. When in the playoff run did you have a sense from talking to Alex Cora going into that series at all that they were going to manage it so differently?
To use the starters out of the bullpen, not really. I mean, Alex didn't tip his hand about that. But you saw it right away in game one with Rick Porcello coming out of the pen to get a couple of critical outs. And, of course, we saw that theme played over and over, and it wound up with Chris Sale pitching the final inning of the clincher against the Dodgers. So, and, of course, Eovaldi with the great bullpen performances. So it was a tip-off of the way he was going to manage. Totally different than the regular season. You do that in the regular season, you burn out your staff.
It has changed so dramatically, Joe, the way that managers use starting pitching in the playoffs, and I think in particular in the World Series. I mean, your good friend Rich Hill has been on the downside of, I think, probably too short of a hook. The Dodgers may well have a World Series ring had they not taken Rich out of some of those games. But in the top of the sixth inning of this game one in 2018, Alex Cora has sort of seen enough when Sale gives up hits to Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton, and he takes him out. He brings in Ryan Brazier. Now, Brazier would go on to be one of the real heroes in the bullpen for the Red Sox all the way into the World Series. But that night at Fenway Park, his first real taste of the cauldron of postseason action, both Voit and Didi Gregorius get him. And so it's a tumultuous start to Brazier and his run in the 18 playoffs.
But then, of course, he came back and got Gary Sanchez in a key spot after admonishing him to get back in the batter's box with a few expletives.
In as many words. Wasn't that the remarkable part about that year, Joe, is you got the superstars like Mookie and J.D. and the ace and Chris Sale, but it's people like Ryan Brazier, of all people, literally off the scrap heap, who's called to a tryout from a bachelor party in Las Vegas. One team calls him back after several watch and pitch. I mean, Ryan Brazier was an unbelievable part of that narrative.
Yeah, mate, he saw him pitch in try camp in January. He didn't sign him for almost 2 months, and he comes to spring training, and we saw him. Who's this guy? Where he was it number 20, number 48? Who is this guy? And we had to run him down, but he pitched so well. It was a big part of that season. But to win a world championship, you have to have contributions from so many people that you don't expect to perform like that.
Such a neat story how Alex Cora would have to tell the regular players, because in spring training, you saw Ryan Brazier pitch. A lot of the regular guys did not because they had left the ballpark. He came in the seventh, eighth innings, and those guys are not around. And Alex said, guys, you will not believe the stuff that this guy has. And certainly he was proven right. So it's 5-2 going into the seventh inning, and then Brandon Workman, Luke Voit. I mean, Luke Voit, of all people, has a big game one in the division series. He grounds out to score Andrew McCutchen. And so it's a 5-3 game. And here is where things get really interesting, Joe, what you were talking about, and where Alex Cora really shows Red Sox fans how he's going to handle this thing. In the eighth inning, Rick Porcello comes on to face a lot of the Yankees' big hitters. He's got Andujar, Sanchez, and Gleyber Torres, and he sees three of them. He gives up a hit to Torres, and immediately Alex Cora goes to the mound and brings on Craig Kimbrel.
Well, you recall, was not a big fan of four-out saves. He liked to pitch his one inning, but he did get out of that jam, and, of course, the ninth inning got a little hairy.
Isn't that crazy, Joe? I mean, for whatever reason, Kimbrel, with a big lead in a non-save situation, or for more than three outs, just can you remember a guy in your career who was, you know, like that, in that when you just have to get the three outs, he lights out automatic, but any other situation, he sometimes struggled.
Well, we've seen a lot of closers struggle when there's no save situation in line. They like those numbers. That's part of it, but a lot of it is they don't have that same adrenaline flow, that same concentration, perhaps. But that was unusual, and this time the Red Sox did more or less escape with a four-out save.
So Andrew McCutchen is the hitter, and Craig Kimbrel comes on, and he gets him to fly out to right. And the Red Sox go to the bottom of the eighth, leading by two. And the fans at Fenway are feeling pretty good now, Joe, three outs away from a win in game one. And we are going to replicate exactly what they heard. Bob Leader is here to lead us in the Fort Myers version of Sweet Caroline.
The leader of the band from Livonia, New York. For a great Lanai audience in Southwest Florida, Leader, former band director at Livonia High School outside of Rochester, New York,
and still sounds so good. So
a great
good,
jazz musician,
it?
So
Man,
good,
alive.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive, it's deep, it's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one. Portrait. Number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast.
If your day sounds like,
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through, you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the Markable Fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age. Wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain. All symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
All right. So David Robertson gets the Red Sox in the bottom of the eighth, and then Kimbrel, to your point, Joe, top of the ninth, here comes Aaron Judge. Hits the solo home run, 5-4. What's the feeling like in Fenway Park at that moment?
That this one slips sliding away. It's exactly how I felt at that moment. And it was not the very comfortable feeling.
Why? This team had sort of obvious glaring bullpen needs. Is that what was contributing to that, where you just said, you know, this unbelievable historic run, is this going to be the Achilles heel that haunts this team and prevents them from winning?
Well, it was certainly in 2003. And you had that feeling it could be the case again. And Kimbrel had been shaky. I mean, let's face it, throughout the entire postseason, he wasn't the dominant pitcher he had been earlier, whether that was command issues with his breaking ball or people were not swinging at it and sitting on his fastball. I don't know. But, you know, in the long run, he did escape.
He did indeed. In fact, he strikes out the side in that ninth inning, and the Red Sox get out of town in Game 1 with a narrow win. We'll talk about Game 2 and 3 the next time we convene for one of these podcasts. But it's interesting. I'm sort of surprised, Joe, that you felt like even though they won that Game 1, you left the ballpark with somewhat of an ominous feeling.
Yes, because they had a 5-0 lead. It looked like it'd be a laugher, and it nearly got away. And, of course, part of it is the club they were playing. I mean, you always have those feelings about the Yankees. And how are they going to spoil the party? But fortunately, this time, they didn't. They only won the one game.
I find that it makes it much sweeter when the Yankees are part of a postseason run for the Red Sox. Yes, is it nice if you have to play the Tampa Bay Rays and the Cleveland Indians and maybe those are down years for them? I guess so. But we both know, Joe, that the lore of 2004 is not remotely the same if it's not the Yankees on the other side. And in some ways, on the first round of what is, I think most people agree, the greatest season start to all the way finish at the end of the World Series, I think it's historically important that you get past the New York Yankees.
And to win at Yankee Stadium for the second time, as they did in 2004, to walk off the field on the Yankees' home turf and celebrate, I think did make it extra special. And there is something better about beating the Yankees than beating another club.
You watched with your own eyes and talked over so many of those moments of heartbreak for the Red Sox and for their fans, especially in the old stadium. I know it's a little different in the new ballpark. Did you ever feel like there were ghosts in that old new Yankee stadium?
Oh, yeah, many times. I'll never forget, I think it was Greg Harris pitching and Mike Stanley was batting for the Yankees. This was a game in 93 where both clubs are going nowhere. And Stanley hits a fly ball, caught. Ball game over. Oh, no, it's not. A fan had run on the field. The umpire called time.
Right.
And Stanley got a hit. The Yankees went on to win the game. And you had a feeling this could only happen at the old Yankee Stadium. And it was an intimidating place because of the overhang and the outfield. The fans are right on top of you. The newer Yankee Stadium doesn't have that same aura. You got the moat there with a super high price seats behind home plate, many of which are unoccupied. And it's more corporate it's almost like a digital replica of the old ballpark. It just doesn't have that same aura about it. So, but there certainly were some ghosts there, I think.
We've talked a lot about some of the unintended consequences of no games for now and how that might look for contracts. It occurred to me yesterday, Joe, that the currency of the realm right now in baseball is young, controllable players. And while the Orioles, who we talked about last week, might benefit from not paying Chris or not having Chris Davis play games, the Red Sox would get almost immeasurably harmed if they don't get a year of Rafael Devers at whatever it is, $680,000. I mean, he is one of the, if not the number one bargain for production in the entire sport. They want Devers at this cost for 2020.
He's controllable and is for a couple of years. And, I mean, his talent is limitless.
To that point, the commissioner announced that no matter what, if there are not games, that the Astros bans will be in place no matter what. That even if there's not a season, all of the penalties are going to carry on, which means for A.J. Hinch that if there's no season, that, you know, if another team wanted to hire him for 2021, they could do that. Don't you think that A.J. Hinch will get another managerial job?
He won. So that's usually all it takes.
Alex,
I think
Cora
he will.
Too, right?
Yes, I think so. Alex might perhaps do a year of TV or something before that, but he'll be in demand. There's no question about it. But when you win, that's the case.
You know, we're going to try as best we can to talk to people and get as much inside info as we can about when this thing may start. But really, Joe, there's just no way to do it. And I think at the moment, you know, the fact that some states, baseball has said they're not going to play games if there are any state regulations that prevent public gatherings. And yesterday, Virginia and D.C. and Maryland have said, we can't have gatherings of any size, and we're going to practice stay-at-home social distancing until the third week of June. So to me, it means June is less and less likely every day that passes.
It's so hard to speculate now. This hasn't crested yet, so...
Well, we're just going to wait and see. Ed Farmer, a member of your fraternity, Joe, a longtime radio voice of the Chicago White Sox, a big league pitcher in his own right, and a guy who had a good career and a great career in the booth. What are your memories of Ed? And I know it was hard to wake up and read that news.
Yeah, Ed would have been at Fenway Park today in the next booth to us doing play-by-play of the season opener for the Red Sox at home and the White Sox visiting, along with his partner Darren Jackson. I used to love to listen to those guys on the way home from Fenway every night, even though the White Sox were going nowhere, because they talked baseball, were so entertaining and so informative, wonderful guys. Ed was a real character, a wonderful guy, and he had so many different interests. He pitched in the big leagues at the age of 17, broke in with the Cleveland Indians in 1971, and he was very proud and loved to tell me about a letter he got when he was 11 years old from Neil Mahoney, the Red Sox scouting director, a letter talking about his talent as an 11-year-old and how the Red Sox would keep an eye on him.
Really?
Till he got of age to sign, and then he signs at 17 with the Indians, got to the big leagues, pitched for several clubs, had a period in his late 20s where he was hurt and didn't pitch for the big leagues in a couple of years, came back and had a second career, made the All-Star team with his White Sox in 1980 and finished up in 83. He was a Southsider, went to St. Rita's High School on the south side of Chicago, so he was a hometown hero there, and went to the booth after his playing days, where he and Darren Jackson formed a wonderful team. But what I loved about Ed was his passion for the game and also his knowledge. Ed had polycystic kidneys, which are usually fatal. Sometimes his mother passed away at the age of 38. It's inherited. And he became one of the very first patients to get a kidney transplant in Boston at Beth Israel Hospital in the early 90s. He was scouting for the Orioles when he got sick, and Larry Lucchino got him into the hospital. Larry's running the Orioles at the time, had the surgery. got a kidney from his brother. And he was very, very grateful for that. And every time the White Sox came to Fenway, he would have all of his doctors from Beth Israel and from Harvard Medical School in his booth. Hmm. And there would be a big get-together of medical people. And Ed would go to Harvard, and he'd study medical research. And he could really just blow you away with his knowledge of research into cancer and all kinds of other maladies, including, of course, a kidney disease. So he was so much fun to be around. And I just texted his partner, Darren Jackson, who, of course, is so upset by this. They were very close. DJ's a great guy, too. He went to spring training with the Red Sox in the mid-90s. I think it was the strike year, 95. Didn't make the ball club. He had an invitation, and when they didn't sign him, he had an opt-out. And he signed with the Minnesota Twins, and about 2 weeks into the regular season, we're at the Metrodome, and Darren Jackson hit a grand slam to beat the Red Sox. Hit it off Toby Borland, the sidewinder.
I saw where Darren posted on social media. He has had a front row seat for what has been going on with Ed for a lot of years. And those of us around the game have seen that Ed has taken fewer and fewer road trips. And he's really, in the last year or two, had to really hunker down and fight this thing. And so Darren said that while I really miss my friend and I will forever, you know, long for the days we had in the booth, he has ended his suffering. And so if there's any upside in that,
yes,
there is that. And in a way, that it's just one of those crazy things where he would have been at Fenway Park today, you know, celebrating with his doctors and all those who helped him. You know, we talked about the Labor Day picnics and all the community that baseball has with its fans. There are not many people walking on the face of the earth, Joe, but you're one of them who can talk about what it feels like to have that relationship with that many people. And there are people throughout Chicago and throughout the Midwest who have listened to Ed do thousands of games. What does it mean to you, and what must it have meant to Ed to have that relationship with so many people?
Well, it's something that you can't bottle. It's a real privilege to be in people's homes and cars or in their headsets and to be their eyes and ears. And, of course, the number one prerequisite is you have to have their trust. They have to believe what you're saying. And that's why you have to be open and honest about it. And I think that forms that special bond, that and longevity. We talk about in broadcasting the Trendex. What's a performer's Trendex? It's the recognition factor. And a Trendex is usually dictated by how long you've been somewhere.
Well, then yours is through the roof.
Yeah. This would be year 38. Hopefully it'll start sooner than later.
No kidding. We are hopeful for that. As always, Joe, a real pleasure. And we are thinking of Ed and his family and all of those who are close to him.
We certainly will miss Ed Farmer, passed away at the age of 70, a wonderful guy. And we hope we see the White Sox again sooner than later, and we can have our own version, belatedly, of opening day at Fenway.
It's interesting. I agree with that wholeheartedly. We hope that that happens. It seems likely that when they start the schedule, they're just going to pick it up wherever it was. And the Red Sox are scheduled to be on the south side in the month of August. But I do think, Joe, don't you, that if we get into late July, early August, we could be talking about a total redo where you just say, all right, we're going to play 80 games and we have to do something that's a little bit more equitable than let the schedule play out as it was written before the year started.
I would think so. I mean, it's going to be an unequal situation anyway. There's going to be a lot of inequality because you can't possibly face the top teams. Every team can't play the first and second place teams, can't play each other all the time, and there will be tilted to more games against maybe tanking teams, although hopefully there won't be as many of those this year. And really, there shouldn't be. This should be a guard against tanking.
It totally should. And by the way, maybe there's a little upside there, too. Maybe you say to yourself, if you're one of these teams who is not loaded for a long run, we're going to play 80 or 100 games. Let's go all in on this thing and see what can happen.
I think Pete Abraham made a good point in the Globe recently where he said that a shortened season might help the Red Sox because of the lack of depth in the starting rotation. That makes a lot of sense.
I totally agree with that. And let's just hope that we get to see some of those starting pitchers before long. And one last thing before we do say goodbye. Chris Sale did have his Tommy John procedure. I guess there's some thought that he could be ready June of 2021. I guess everyone's holding their breath, right, Joe, that that procedure will be what has been needed for 2 years now, ever since the 2018 run.
Well, it takes a lot of work to come back from Tommy John surgery, a lot of sweat. And Chris Sale has never been shy about that. I mean, he's so intense that you know he will do everything in his human capacity to get ready to pitch in June or whatever it is of 21.
Well, I'm sorry we're not at Fenway today, Joe. I am glad that we've been able to spend some time here today on your patio once again. But it will be very sweet when we sit in that booth at Fenway Park for the first time.
And we'll take 46-inch showers, despite here sitting in the beauty of Southwest Florida.
We will indeed. Thanks so much, Joe.
Okay, well, we look forward to doing it again. Great job.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them. Yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.